Brother Dwayne asked that we turn to Daniel chapter 5 and asked that I would read 1 through 12. He told me he's going to be covering the whole chapter, but just shorten it. We will read verses 1 through 12. And as I just briefly read over it up here, it just made me think of where we are today, and it just stuck out to me. A couple verses down here, they mentioned that they were drinking from the golden vessels, and they were praising the gods of gold, silver, brass, and iron. And, you know, they were having a good time. And we also know that the Bible says that when the Lord returns, it'll be as the days of Noah. You know, people will be marrying, giving in marriage. And we certainly see people living it up today, and it just reminded me of that. Okay, Daniel chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring golden and silver vessels, which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which were at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised gods of gold, silver, brass, iron, wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall in the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote, and the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and shall shew me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold put around his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known the king's interpretation thereof. Then was the king Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. And the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts be troubled thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the day of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say thy father, made master of the magicians and astrologers and Chaldeans and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and shewing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he shew the interpretation." So this reading on our minds, let us come to prayer.
I want to thank Brother Clayton for his prayer, as well as each of you on my behalf this evening. Appreciate that. Trust that the Lord would be honored this evening. I appreciate the sermon this morning very much. Some of what you heard is probably going to be kind of heard again tonight, and Larry and I didn't get together on this, so I guess we'll take it for what it's worth, hopefully, and apply it to our lives. One morning in 1888, Alfred Noble, or Nobel, invented the inventor of dynamite, the man who had spent his life amassing a fortune from the manufacture and sale of weapons, awoke to read his own obituary. The obituary was printed as a result of a simple journalistic error. Alfred's brother had died, and a French reporter carelessly reported the death of the wrong brother. Any man would be disturbed under the circumstances, but to Alfred, the shock was overwhelming because he saw himself as the world saw him, the dynamite king, the weapon maker, the great industrialist who had made an immense fortune from explosives. This, as far as the public or the general public was concerned, was the entire purpose of his life, so said the obituary. None of his true intentions to break down the barriers that separated men and ideas were recognized or given serious consideration. And he was quite simply, in the eyes of the public, a merchant of death. And for that alone, he would be remembered. And as he read his obituary with shocking horror, he resolved to make clear to the world the true meaning and purpose of his life. And this could be done through the final disposition of his fortune. And his last will and testament would be the expression of his life's ideals. And the result was the most valued prizes given to this day to those who have done most for the cause of peace, the Nobel Peace Prize. And I would ask you again, as we were Larry was touching on that, or really aiming or referring to that this morning and brought that in, how are we known by others? How would our obituary read if it were written by a non-biased person who was trying to describe our lives? I'm not talking about, you know, our family usually makes us sound pretty good. Hopefully it's all true. But they're not going to pick out the bad parts about us in the obituary. But a non-biased person who would be trying to describe our lives, how would it read if they wrote it? And with those thoughts in mind, we'd like to look at Daniel chapter 5 and draw some lessons from it this evening if we could. The title of the message is, There is a Man, taken from verse 11 as it is referring to Daniel there in that verse. As we come to chapter 5 of Daniel, 23 years have passed since the end of chapter 4. King Nebuchadnezzar has died, and we are introduced to King Belshazzar. Now, who was Belshazzar? Well, in this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as Belshazzar's father. Now, Belshazzar may have been Nebuchadnezzar's son, but he also could have been his grandson, or perhaps even his great-grandson, for the word father can mean father or grandfather. At any rate, Belshazzar was closely related to Nebuchadnezzar. Now, history tells us that there were other kings who ruled the Babylonian kingdom during these 23 years since Nebuchadnezzar and before Belshazzar. And in fact, it is believed that Belshazzar was really what we would call probably like a co-king, in that Belshazzar reigned along with King Nabonidus over the kingdom of Babylon. However, it was Belshazzar who lived within the walls of Babylon and occupied the throne of that city. Now, it would seem that King Belshazzar was living his life like many do in the day and age in which we live. And I'm not so sure that we don't live like this, especially when we're young, or at least kind of think this way, that our lives are invincible. I think that's a tendency even of young folks. And when we were younger, we pretty much think, well, we got a lot of years ahead of us. That's not always true, but I think that's somewhat our thinking. But it would seem that Belshazzar was living that way, as living as if he was invincible. And as chapter 5 opens, basically, all that remains under the rule of the Babylonian authority is the city of Babylon itself. And it itself is under siege by the Medes and the Persians. And some believe that was maybe a couple months, maybe 3, 4, depends who you read. But at any rate, it was under siege, the city of Babylon, surrounded by the Medes and the Persians. But still, Belshazzar is partying with 1,000 others and no doubt feeling rather secure inside the huge walls of Babylon. Those walls were extremely thick, and I read some conflicting measurements. I'm sure George could probably give us what he thinks. I don't know, George, you know the width of those walls, at least what you believe is true?
They said they could run 2 chariots across the side.
Yeah, I had read that too. extremely wide, upwards of 300 some feet high, with towers on top of that yet so they could see all around, extreme large bronze gates that as way of entering in and out of the city. Basically, there's no way to penetrate those walls, humanly speaking. And to top it all off, they had the Euphrates River flowing right through the city of Babylon. And so providing all the necessary water. And when those gates were shut and considering the size of those walls, it really was impossible to get into that city, humanly speaking. So they thought. I also read that there was even a 20-year supply of rations inside of the city of Babylon. So what was there to be worried about if you're Belshazzar or the people of Babylon? They were secure in themselves and with what they had built, yet they didn't realize how near they were to the brink of doom and destruction. And I believe there's a lesson here for us, and there's a lot of lessons in this chapter, and I don't pretend to cover them all this evening. But here's a lesson. That is that it is often when we feel the most secure in ourselves, in our own accomplishments and in our own strength and in our own goodness and in our own things, that danger is the closest. Think about that. When we're too big on ourselves and we're too comfortable without God, you know, sometimes I think we get so comfortable and we really don't need God that much because I'm pretty comfortable the way things are. I'll reach out for him when I really need him. When we get to that point, danger is the closest. Belshazzar's party consisted of eating and drinking and drunkenness and immorality. And at one point, as was read, Belshazzar commands that the vessels of gold and silver, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, that they be brought to the party so all of them could drink for them. So sure enough, they were brought. And verse 4 says, and I'm going to reread just to get our thoughts there. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Now, what was the significance of those vessels? While they were in the temple, or the vessels that they were drinking out of from that were taken from Jerusalem, while they were in the temple in Jerusalem, the vessels were used by the priests in service and worship of God. And when Nebuchadnezzar took them out of the temple there at Jerusalem and took them back to Babylon, it was his way of showing the people, his own people and the people of Israel as well, look, my God's greater than your God because I can take the vessels out of his temple and back to my temple of my gods. When Belshazzar and his guests drank from the vessels and praised the false gods, it was an open act of disrespect and blasphemy, publicly defying the God of Israel. And it was like then God said, look, this is enough. I've had enough. And that brings us to verse 5. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. You know, it's as if here Belshazzar challenged God and his authority, and God responded to Belshazzar's actions and placed a message on the wall for all to see. And the king was terrified. Good reason. And I think we need to beware. Now, I don't think it's anything wrong with asking, with questioning God when it's within the attitude of I need to know for my own good, or what can I learn, or, you know, just pouring our hearts out to him. We need to beware of challenging God and his authority for fear that he might accept the challenge, as he did here with Belshazzar. Well, the king cried out for his astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers to be brought in to read and interpret the message. A great reward was promised to the one who could do so. even to being third ruler in the kingdom. And I think that's significant. It would be right behind what would we consider like those co-kings and Belshazzar and Nabonidus, even though at that point I think Nabonidus had been defeated and had been exiled. But at any rate, he was promised third ruler in the kingdom if you could read the message and give the interpretation. But just like when Nebuchadnezzar called them in twice before, they could not help him. You know what? Belshazzar got the same results. He got the same results. And again, he was distraught with fear. That didn't help him at all when they couldn't help him out. It made him all the more fearful. And the queen, who is believed to have been Belshazzar's mother, finds out what's going on and enters into the banquet house and speaks to the king, saying in verse 10, "Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed." In fact, before that, she said, "O king, live forever." I don't think she realized how that wasn't going to happen. But that's how she addressed him. "Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed." Verse 11, "There is a man in thy kingdom." There is a man. And I the significance of that, I don't know, as I've run that around in my mind and have tried to want to bring that out this evening, I don't think I can. But the significance behind what she was saying and what I want to try to get across tonight is there is a man, and what that was implying about Daniel. And notice what the queen knows about Daniel as we read the rest of verse 11 there. "In whom is the spirit of the holy gods? And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar thy father," the king I say, "thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called and he will show the interpretation." Look what she knew about him. It's interesting to me that not too far back, a few chapters back, it was Daniel who told the king, "There is a God." And now the queen is saying to the king, "There is a man. There is a man." There's significance to that, I believe, and what's behind all that and what it means. Well, if Daniel is brought before the king. And by the way, she didn't just mean when she said there's a man, she wasn't just talking about his physical stature. He meant a whole lot more than that. Implied was his quality. He's brought before the king, and in verse 13, it says that the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee." And he had simply from his mother, the queen, what she had told him, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men and the astrologers have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing, make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing, make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. Notice again how he said, "I have even heard of thee." You know, Daniel at this time, I believe, was in his 80s. 70 years had passed since the time that they were taken captive, him and the others. And here he was, an older man, or we would say an old man, I suppose, in his 80s. That's getting to seem younger all the time, though, that 80s, isn't it, for some of us. But at any rate, he was in his 80s, and Daniel, he was in a pagan culture all those years, in a pagan culture, a pagan society, and yet Daniel had never compromised his faith in God. Never compromised his faith in the true God. I go back to the questions at the beginning. How are we known by others? How would someone else describe us? How would an unbiased person describe our lives in a future obituary? You know, we're all going to have one unless the Lord comes back before it takes place. Would they say we are godly, had within us the spirit of the holy God? You know, that needs to be evident, obviously, first above all. But what else could be said? Now, there's more than just having that said about us. Because I think it's possible to have that thought about or said about a person, a godly person, and yet they're lacking some other things that ought to be there. Or I'm lacking. So what else could be said about us? Like, maybe he or she is true to Jesus, even if it means standing alone. Or he or she shows compassion. Would you like to be remembered for that? I would. That's a quality of Christ. He or she shows compassion. He or she is humble and meek, is kind. You know, we can be, quote, godly people and not be very kind at times. I don't think that makes sense, but you know what I mean, I think. Or labeled as godly. Maybe it's he or she shows true love to others. We're thinking about what could be said about us, how people know us, what they could write about us in our obituary. He or she cares enough to listen to me. He or she relates well to others. He or she is respectful. He or she is merciful. What would someone else say that describes us? If they were to say, I have heard of thee, like they did of Dan, like Belshazzar of Daniel, what have they heard? Could it be said that he or she is a true friend? He loves and respects his wife. She loves and respects her husband. He is a loving father. She is a loving mother, and we go on and on. I think you're getting the idea. What people say they've heard of me. Would it be there is a man? There is a woman, or there's a young person. I've heard of thee. What godliness is there in our lives, or what good qualities that others would say are true? And they're there. What is it that we need to improve on? You know, the final obituaries have yet to be written, so there's still opportunity. Well, Daniel was offered the same reward as these others if he could interpret the message. It's interesting that Daniel refuses the reward. Basically said, look, I'm not interested in it. Give it to someone else or keep it. Yet he said he would still interpret the words on the wall. And I believe that Daniel knew that this wasn't about rewards for himself, but it was about him being God's messenger. It had nothing to do with being rewarded by the king. He knew he was God's messenger. In verses 18 to 23, Daniel basically explains why the message was written on the wall. I'm going to take time. Poor Clayton, I had him reading the first 12 verses, and I told him up here, why don't you read the whole chapter? And then I said, no, just read the first 12. He did fine. I appreciate that. But I'm going to read these. Instead of taking the time earlier to read the whole chapter, I'm going to read these right now, these first 18 to 23. Sometimes we skip some of them. A chapter this size, you can't really go verse by verse, obviously, in a short time. But beginning at 18, O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts. and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven until he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, that he appointed, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knowest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy Lord, thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? He began by reminding King Belshazzar, now look, the kingdom, the majesty, the glory, and the honor that your father or grandfather has, again, the word there in the King James's father, your father Nebuchadnezzar had was only because, notice he says, the Most High God gave it to him. This is about the Most High God. There is none up that can reach to his stature or to his supremacy. The only reason that Nebuchadnezzar had that and was able to pass out the judgments that he did was because the Most High God had given him the authority and given him the kingdom. Daniel then reminded Belshazzar of how pride was the downfall of Nebuchadnezzar, as I read there in verse 20. He reminded Belshazzar how that Nebuchadnezzar became like an animal and lived like an animal, and that it was pride that was his downfall. And again, notice in verse 21, he says he had to learn that the Most High God, the Most High God, ruled in the kingdom of man, and that he appointeth over to whomsoever he will. And then Daniel made a defining statement concerning the guilt of Belshazzar. And I'm going to reread this again. Verse 22, he says, and thou his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. That's like the nails in the coffin, as they say. You, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all that I just said. You knew all that. You knew all about the Most High God. You knew about the pride of your father. You knew what happened to him because of it, and how Nebuchadnezzar had to recognize the Most High God as supreme authority. You knew all this, yet you didn't humble yourself. But in pride, you lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. Verse 23, and they have brought the vessels of his house. You were so forward, so bold in your pride to have brought the vessels of his house before thee. And thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? You see, it was God's response to you, Belshazzar. To you doing that. That's why he sent part of the hand writing the message on the wall. That was his response to all that you've done. Belshazzar failed to learn from what he knew. He failed to learn from what he knew. He failed to change because of what he knew. Here's the lesson for us. We need to learn from what we know. We need to learn from what we know. We need to change for the good because of what we know. And then we need to recognize the awfulness. I say the awfulness of pride, and it is a lifting up of oneself against God. We can excuse pride and push it under the rug and say, well, that's just part of my nature, or I'm just thinking pretty good of myself. It's really a lifting up of myself against God, just as Belshazzar. And we need to see the awfulness of that and how essential it is to have a humble heart. Because Daniel said, look, you knew and you didn't change and you didn't humble yourself. And you knew it. Well, Daniel reads the message. Then in verse 25, this is the writing that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin, if I'm pronouncing them correctly. And then he interprets the words, and it's very plain in the scripture here, the interpretation. Verses 26 to 28, this is the interpretation of the thing, Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel or Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and are found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Really, Perez and Upharsin have the same root word, the same meaning. Basically, he said, it means your time is up. Your number is being called. No more second chances, Belshazzar. No more opportunities. Your time is up. As always, God is going to have the final say, and he has the final say about you. This is it. The idea of Tekel, it's the picture here is, in other words, he says, and the picture is of a scale, balancing scale. God's standard on one. Belshazzar's over here, and guess what? He was too light. Couldn't balance the scale. Said, you're found wanting. Kingdom's divided. It's finished. Your kingdom's finished, Belshazzar. It'll be divided between the Medes and the Persians. And I have to give Belshazzar a little credit here. In verse 29, he was true to his word. He still rewarded Daniel after that kind of message. And I'm not so sure a third in the kingdom really meant a whole lot when the kingdom was going to end. But he rewards him. One could say, well, why did God choose this method of writing a message on the wall to inform Belshazzar of the judgment coming? I believe there could be some significance to this, but, you know, the kings of Babylon were known for writing solemn decrees. Was this God's way of saying, look, I'm the king, Belshazzar. I'm the Most High God. I sit upon the throne, and I too can write a solemn decree. Here it is. Verses 30, 31. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. We know, I believe, the Euphrates River was diverted, and they were able to get in through where the river would have flowed, or at least it was not as high, and were able to take control of Babylon, the Medes and the Persians. And Belshazzar lost his life. Belshazzar in Babylon found out that there is no wall high enough. No wall thick enough to keep out God's judgment when he writes a decree. There is none. They found out, and I like this, that somebody wrote, and I believe it's true, if you think about it, I quote, the strength of a kingdom and an individual is never on the outside, but on the inside. Belshazzar thought they were safe all around him. He had walls of protection. He thought he had all he needed. But it was inside where the problem was. Himself and the people. The strength of an individual, the strength of you and me, is never on the outside, but it's on the inside. What are the lessons for us from this here? At the close of the chapter, well, sin brings destruction. Sin brings death. Ezekiel 18:20, really, this chapter brings Ezekiel 18:20 right out into light. I mean, it just shows that obviously all God's word is true, but it really rings this verse out. Listen to what Ezekiel 18:20 says. It says, "The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him." And that's exactly what happened to Belshazzar in Babylon. God's judgment is sure. What he says is true. It will happen. You know, without Christ, every single one of us is placed on that balance scale. And you know what happens? As much weight as I try to put on that, I can't get it up to be equal. I can't balance the scale. I can't make it up to God's standard. But with Christ, we balance the scale, or we don't do it. He does it for us. And we're no longer found wanting, and we can be as Daniel, and we don't need to fear judgment. You look at Daniel in that chapter, he wasn't shaking in his boots, as we say, or his knees weren't smoting together. He didn't have to fear. How are we known by others? Brother Larry spoke about the importance of one's name, and it says who we are. And when Daniel's name was mentioned, the result was, there is a man. There is a man. And let me tell you what all I know about him. It was good. What do others say when they hear your name and my name? Is it, there's a man? Or there's a woman, or there's a young person who has the Spirit of God and good qualities in their life. We can be that way through Christ and the help of the Lord, obviously working in our hearts and lives. God help us to be known as those kind of people.
It was enriching to be here. I was challenged by the last thoughts that our brother brought to us, because the shell that we exist in is only a vessel that contains a volume that God puts within, especially the Christian. Reminded, and I was just challenged tonight, you know, when his mother, or his, the queen, mentioned about this Daniel, he didn't mention about his physique, didn't mention about his strength, didn't mention about what he looked like. He just mentioned that there's something in him. You know, that if that is a message of each one of us just Christians, that is a message. That as people, we relate with people, what we call ourselves is an evidence of what's within. Dominates our actions, but really, that's what's remembered. And also reminded the responsibility of us as Christians, because God has put himself within us. And to let him move and live and work, what a valuable force. Daniel is certainly a character in which we are challenged by, as a young man, as an old man, throughout his life. But as Brother Duane mentioned tonight, he realized that what was within him couldn't be fed with rewards from the outside. It had to be fed from an internal person. And he rejected rewards because he knew it would affect what was inside. May we be people that strive in our souls and spirits to be someone that's filled within the Spirit of the living God. May we kneel for prayer.